Very good to be with you this morning. I want to talk about the solar system. You think that's kind of an odd topic for a Sunday morning church service or Sunday school session. But if you think about it, when we're out presenting the gospel to folks and we're telling them they need to trust in Jesus for salvation, which we should be doing, there are objections to that. People will say you can't trust the Bible anymore. And one of the main reasons that they give for this is that science has somehow disproved the Bible. We hear that all the time. And in the area of not just biology, they'll say, well, evolution's the way life came about, but also in the area of astronomy. And they'll say, well, you know, the galaxies are billions of years old, and they sort of evolved, and the Earth evolved, and so on. And what I want to show you today is that science actually does confirm the Bible, particularly in the field of astronomy, which is my specialty field. I think it's helpful for us to know a little bit about astronomy, the basics, and I'm just going to stick with the solar system because we know so much about it today. And what a blessing that we live in a time where we've actually sent spacecraft out into space that, and have explored each of the large worlds of our solar system and a lot of the smaller ones too. I feel very blessed to live in this time. Our ancient ancestors could only have imagined it, what these worlds would look like up close. And the other thing to note is the contributions of creationists. A lot of people don't realize that astronomy really was founded by creation scientists, those people who believed in the Bible and believed in biblical creation. They did not accept evolution or the millions of years. You see, evolutionists have to accept the millions of years because they need that to make evolution sound even remotely plausible. So they need the long periods of time. But what I want to show you is that the evidence is consistent with a recent creation. The Bible indicates a universe, a solar system that's much younger than the 4.5 billion years, but in fact thousands of years old. And it's not a problem for God to speak the universe into existence. Not a problem at all. The Bible tells us he made it in 6 days. We'll talk more about that in the main service. So this is what our solar system would look like from above. If you could highlight the orbits of the planets and label them, this is what it would look like. You'll notice that they are approximately circles. They're not exactly circles. They're actually kind of squashed a little bit, the orbits there. They're actually ellipses. And it was a creation scientist who discovered that. It was Johannes Kepler. Johannes Kepler was a very devout Christian. Originally, he was going to go into ministry, but then he saw how God was also glorified in astronomy. And Kepler even calculated the age of the Earth at about 6,000 or 7,000 years, something like that, using the information in the Bible. So he was a Bible scholar, but also an astronomer and mathematician, very good at math. And he realized from data that had been taken by another Christian, Tycho Brahe, that from the measurements of the planets, that the planets actually orbit in ellipses, which is a squashed circle. And you can see that with Mercury's orbit there. You can see it sometimes a little closer to the sun right there, and sometimes it's further away from the sun. And Kepler realized that. And you might say, well, yeah, I can see that. That's not that hard. But he didn't have computer software to be able to do that. He did it from math. He did it from observations that Tycho had taken. And it's not trivial. Because if you think about it, Tycho had recorded the positions of planets as seen from the Earth. And so that is a tricky problem because we're on one of these little specks that's orbiting the sun, looking at these other specks orbiting the sun, and it's not trivial to figure these things out. Brilliant mind. So the planets orbit in a counterclockwise fashion if you're looking over the north pole of the solar system, and the inner planets orbit a lot faster than the outer planets. That's something else that Kepler realized. He actually figured out the exact formula for the periods of the planets in relation to their distance to the sun. He figured their period in years squared is equal to their distance cubed in the appropriate units. So he found out that exact mathematical relationship. So it's interesting. It's really been the creationists who were the founders of astronomy, people who believed the Bible. How about that? And God honored their faith and allowed them to make these wonderful discoveries. You can see the inner planets orbiting there. As we go out further into the solar system, the outer planets orbit at much greater distances, and they're just barely moving compared to the inner planets. We really have to speed up time quite a bit, so the inner planets are really whipping around there in order to get the outer planets to do anything. So really kind of amazing. Pluto, which isn't, of course, we demoted Pluto, so he's not there anymore, but actually he is there. There's Pluto. Pluto actually takes 248 years to orbit the sun once. So it is only, and it was discovered in 1930, so it's only made a fraction of an orbit since it was discovered. But that's what it looks like. And basically, you know, the Bible tells us that God created the luminaries to be for signs, seasons, days, and years. Those are all measurements of time. in our modern society, you know, we have watches and clocks and cell phones that tell us the time. But in the ancient world, they relied on the heavens to tell the time, to tell when to plant, when to harvest, to discern these things. And you can see that the solar system indeed acts like a clock. You can think of each of the planets like a hand on a clock. And we have a lot of those hands, so we can even tell one year from the next and so on. So the universe really does confirm what the Bible teaches. The planets all orbit basically in the same plane, more or less, with the exception of Pluto, which is one of the reasons it got kicked out, by the way. But the eight classical planets all orbit in about the same plane. Sometimes you'll see them in textbooks in a perspective angle like that, and people think people think that's an overhead view and that they're really squashed. Well, they're not. And we can see that here with the computer simulation, that the orbits are pretty close to circles. Pretty neat. So go back into the inner solar system, and you can see just how quick those planets are orbiting compared to the outer ones. So this is their current positions. One of the neat things about, again, living in the time that we live in is we've actually sent spacecraft to all the large objects in our solar system. We've visited them. We've seen them. We know what they look like close up. And what we can do is we can take those images and create world maps and then map them onto the software. And so what I can do is I can simulate what it would look like to actually go there. Some people might take this for granted and they say, well, you know, these are pretty images. And we're used to seeing beautiful images because there's all kinds of fiction out there that has wonderful images. You see movies like Star Wars and it's very beautiful, but that's all fiction. This is fact. And truth is often stranger than fiction, as they say. So what I'm going to show you today are accurate surface renderings from spacecraft that have actually visited these worlds of creation. And I want to show you how each one of these declares the glory of God. And we'll start with the sun. The sun is 99.98% the mass of the solar system. If you think of a bowling ball, say a 10-pound bowling ball, and a nickel and a penny, the mass of the sun would be like the bowling ball. Everything else in the solar system would be the nickel and the penny, and Jupiter would be the nickel. Everything else would be the penny. So the sun is very, very massive. It is 100 times the diameter of the Earth. And so just think about that, what you're looking at there, this ball of hydrogen gas, and it is made of gas. It's 100 times the size of the Earth, and it has these little spots on the surface, which astronomers call sunspots, because we're not very creative, apparently. But those are cooler regions on the sun, and each one of those would be about the size of the Earth. Some of them are bigger than the Earth, like you can see there. So it just gives you a feel for how massive this thing is. Of course, its primary purpose is to give light on the Earth, and to be for signs, seasons, days, and years. And so you might think, well, why did God create such an enormous object with so much energy? I mean, the sun gives off more energy in 1 second than a billion cities could use in an entire year. It just is releasing that energy. Why would God make something so big? Well, I don't know, but if it was to impress me, he succeeded, because God has unlimited power. And of course, we now know that those little pinpricks of light you see in the night sky, those stars, those are suns. Those are just like the sun. Some of them smaller, some of them bigger, a lot bigger. So that's the sun, powered by the fusion of hydrogen into helium. That's a very efficient power source. And so the sun can last a very long time before we'd have any kind of problems, before we'd have to worry about anything. So we've learned a lot about the sun, but I want to get on and talk about some of these planets that orbit the sun. A planet is any large mass that orbits the sun directly and is large enough to be sort of a spherical in shape. So the closest planet, Mercury, was visited by spacecraft in the 1970s. And then again, more recently, we had the Messenger spacecraft fly past Mercury again. Mercury is a lot like the moon. It's about 1/3 the size of the Earth and orbits 3 times closer to the sun than the Earth does. And for that reason, it's quite toasty on the day side. It has no atmosphere, so it's like the moon. Any meteor that comes nearby just crashes into the surface and leaves a crater. And so that's why Mercury's surface is covered with craters. It reminds us of the wonderful protection that we have on the Earth. We have an atmosphere that protects us from a lot of the impacts of craters. Otherwise, we'd look like that, and that would not be so good. But because Mercury has only a very thin atmosphere, but it's virtually non-existent, and it rotates very slowly. It takes, I think, 58 days to rotate once.
And so the day side of Mercury just gets baked. It just gets heated under that sunlight. It reaches temperatures of over 800 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's quite toasty. And then the night side of Mercury, because it hasn't seen the sun in many, many, many days, and because there's no atmosphere to distribute the temperature, actually the night side is very cold. It's negative a few hundred degrees Fahrenheit, which means there's one special place where the temperature is actually pretty comfortable, right? Somewhere in between. And so my point is, if you have to crash land on Mercury, make sure that you land right just before sunrise, or just after sunset, right? Or just before sunrise. And the interesting thing is, because Mercury rotates so slowly, if you indeed landed at the terminator between light and darkness and started running west, you could actually outrun, or pardon me, yeah, you start running west, you could actually outrun sunrise. As long as you keep moving, the planet will just rotate underneath you. You'll stay on the night side. So, but you don't dare stop, or the sunrise will catch up with you in 800 degrees. And that's not good. So now you know what to do if you crash land on Mercury. You've been warned. One of the interesting things they found about Mercury when we sent spacecraft past it is that it has a magnetic field like the Earth does. So your compass would work on Mercury. It'd point to the poles and so on. And that's something that was surprising to the secularists, because in their view, this planet is supposed to be 4.5 billion years old, and magnetic fields decay with time. And the smaller the planet, the faster they decay. And so Mercury really shouldn't have a magnetic field if it's billions of years old. But a friend of mine, Dr. Russ Humphreys, who is he's a PhD physicist and a creationist like myself. He believes that God created a few thousand years ago. He was actually able to predict that the magnetic field of Mercury should be decaying when we sent another spacecraft, the Messenger spacecraft, decades later. Sure enough, the magnetic field has dropped a little bit in the time between those two voyages. So it's consistent with a recent creation. And we're going to find that is common in the solar system and in the universe as well. So that's Mercury. Not really the best planet to visit because of the extreme temperatures and the fact that there's no air. That would be kind of a problem too, or no water for that matter. And the next planet out is Venus. Venus sometimes has been called Earth's twin because Venus is just about the same size as the Earth, just very slightly smaller. Its gravity would be similar to the Earth. You'd weigh about the same, just a little bit less on Venus. And Venus is permanently covered in clouds. And for that reason, in the past, astronomers really didn't know what to make of Venus because you can never see the surface. It's permanently enshrouded in clouds. And some evolutionists thought that Venus might have life on its surface. And they were free to speculate, unfettered by inconvenient data, because of those clouds, right? So they thought there might be tropical, like, because Venus is a little closer to the sun, so it's probably a little warmer than the Earth, and it might have a tropical paradise with all kinds of exotic creatures living on the surface and so on. This is before they found the surface temperature to be 900 degrees Fahrenheit. Venus has a very thick atmosphere of carbon dioxide, so you can't breathe that. And the atmospheric pressure is enough, it would crush you. And even if that weren't the problem, the greenhouse effect makes Venus even hotter than Mercury. Even though it's further away from the sun, it's warmer. And so it's actually 900 degrees, but to the point where you could melt lead, really. So that would not be a very pleasant place to live. And it doesn't matter whether it's day or night, because it's got that atmosphere surrounds the whole planet, and so it's just hot all the time. Now today we have radar, and we send a spacecraft past Venus. In fact, it went into orbit around Venus, the Magellan spacecraft, and it used radar. Radar can go through clouds, and it mapped the surface of Venus. And so today we know the surface of Venus looks like that. It looks like, and if it, you say, well, that looks very unpleasant, you would be right. That is not a place you want to visit on your next vacation. And in fact, those clouds that permanently surround Venus, made up of sulfuric acid type compounds. So there's just lots of wonderful ways to die on Venus. It is just a really unpleasant planet. And you know, some people say, well, wait a minute, why did God make a planet with a toxic atmosphere and 900 degrees Fahrenheit? Well, you're not supposed to go there. He didn't make it as a vacation spot, right? He made it to be beautiful. And Venus, in fact, is the third brightest object in the sky because those clouds are very reflective of the sunlight. So you got the sun, moon, Venus. Venus is the third brightest object. Perhaps those of you that are early risers have seen it in the east just before sunrise. That very bright object, that's Venus. It is a lovely addition to our solar system. Venus also rotates backwards. most of the other planets rotate counterclockwise. If you look down their north pole, Venus rotates clockwise, just exactly the opposite of the other ones. And that is really perplexing for secularists, because in their view, the solar system's supposedly formed from a collapsing nebula, and so everything really ought to be spinning in the same direction and at about the same rate, and Venus just goes exactly the opposite. And I think maybe God did it that way just to confuse the secularists, because there's no other reason for that. Rotates backwards and very slowly. Venus's day takes a long time. And that atmosphere, by the way, that atmosphere is so thick, it bends light. And now our atmosphere does that a little bit. And so when you see those last little glimpses of the sunset, the sun has actually already set, but the light gets bent up above the horizon just a little bit on Earth. With Venus, the bending is so severe that the entire surface of the planet gets bent up above its own horizon. So if you landed on Venus, it would seem like you're in a bowl that goes up instead of down. Very strange, because of the way the light bends. So theoretically, if you were on the north pole of Venus and your friend were on the equator, with a telescope you could see your friend on the equator, because the entire horizon gets bent up. Very, very strange. In fact, you could eventually see yourself. If you had a light bulb and you held it up, eventually you would see a ring of light around you where the light has gone all the way around the planet and come back to your eyes. Very strange. Of course, that would be the least of your problems. So Venus, Earth's sister planet. Well, we got the better sister, I can tell you that. Earth, the next planet out, the third from the sun. My very favorite planet. I'm partial, though. I live there. All my friends live there. All your friends live there. And, of course, Earth is it's just stunningly beautiful. And what a privilege that we live in a time where we actually have pictures of the Earth from space. And we can actually see how beautiful it is. And it is very beautiful and very rich. And, of course, the Earth's designed for life. The Bible says God formed it to be inhabited in Isaiah 45:18. The Earth's formed to be inhabited. And it really is stunning. That beautiful blue liquid water. The water molecule is pretty common in space. You can get H2O, but it's almost always vapor or ice. Whereas on the Earth, you have liquid water. The atmospheric pressure is right. The temperatures are right for liquid water. We think liquid water is essential for life. All life we know of requires water. And so it makes sense that the planet that God formed to be inhabited would have this rich abundance of water on the surface. And, of course, that's also what God used to destroy the wickedness of mankind during the flood year. It's interesting, too. We think the continents probably were different before the flood year. We think they were probably all connected together, something like Pangaea, something like that. And during the flood year, those were pushed apart and into their present positions. And that's actually what we think caused the flood. The flood was caused by a tectonic event, a very rapid tectonic event. And so it's interesting. The Earth has plate tectonics. As far as we know, the Earth's the only planet with plate tectonics. Other planets have tectonic activity, geology, but not plates that can move. And so it's interesting, the one planet that God knew he would have to flood at some point, he made floodable. He had it built into where it could do that naturally. And so it's very interesting. Earth has all kinds of features that make it suitable for life. It does have a protective magnetic field, and that protects us from cosmic radiation, which is harmful to your DNA. It can cause mutations. So the Earth blocks a lot of those because of its magnetic field and also its atmosphere. The Earth has a large moon that orbits it. We call it the moon. Again, we're not very creative, but and that's what it looks like. And the Earth has the largest moon in proportion to its size. When you compare the size of the moon to the planet, Earth wins. And that's what the moon looks like. As it orbits around the Earth, it's rotating, and so it keeps its same face pointed toward the Earth at all times. It's called tidally locked. That's a very energetically favorable position. All large moons do that. They keep their same face pointed at their planet, which means for thousands of years, we had only seen one side of the moon. And it wasn't until the 1960s that we finally were able to send spacecraft past the moon and take pictures of the far side. And so today we can actually do that. We can actually show you what the other side of the moon looks like. And I always thought that was pretty neat, because when I was a kid, my parents actually have a little globe of the moon, and you can see what the far side looks like. And I thought, that's just neat, because our ancestors could only have guessed at that. Because for nearly 6,000 years, people have only seen the one side. And when we live in the generation where we can see the other, and we've actually put people on the moon. It's astonishing to me. But it's true. It's what can can happen when people work together and they use their God-given intellect and they rely on God's uniform upholding of nature. It's amazing what people can accomplish when we are obedient. So that's the moon. All kinds of craters on its surface. Again, there's no atmosphere on the moon, so anything that hits it just impacts and leaves a crater. We actually saw a new impact during the last lunar eclipse, interestingly. We saw an impact hit on the southern region of the moon there. The moon has what's called remnant magnetism, which means it doesn't have a north and south pole like the Earth does. It's kind of like having little bits of magnets all over the surface. And that's an indication that the moon once had a magnetic field that was pretty strong, but it's run down by now. And that's an indication of the youth of the moon. It can't be billions of years old because remnant magnetism would run out by then. So again, there's lots of things like that that confirm the biblical age of the solar system and the Earth in particular. So there we go. Very lovely planet. I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. Designed for life. Now, although Venus has been called Earth's sister planet, the planet that's really the most like the Earth is probably Mars. Not in size. Mars is about half the size of the Earth, and so the gravity would be a little weaker there. But Mars has the most similarity in terms of its features. Mars has mountains like the Earth has. It has canyons like the Earth has. It has riverbeds. They're all dry, but that indicates that there must have been liquid water on Mars in the past, although we don't think there's any today. It has clouds that form in the atmosphere sometimes. It has polar ice caps like the Earth does. It has seasons like the Earth does because Mars is tilted, and if a planet's tilted, it'll have seasons. That's what causes that. And so the ice caps, the northern ice cap shrinks in the summer and it grows in the winter, just like on Earth. And so there's all these similarities and some differences as well. The rotation of Mars is pretty similar to Earth. Earth takes about 24 hours to rotate. Mars takes 24 hours and 36 minutes to rotate, which I think is really neat because that means you could sleep in an extra half an hour every morning and it would never catch up with you. So that'd be kind of neat. You can see there on the surface there, you can see those three spots right there, and there's a fourth one there. Those are volcanoes. Mass, and you think about it, we're looking at a planet here, and you can see from space these volcanoes. They must be massive, and they are. This one right here is Olympus Mons. This is the largest known volcano. It's three times taller than Mount Everest, and the base of it would cover Iowa. So it's astonishing how these features build up on Mars. There's less gravity, they can build up bigger, and there's no plate tectonics, so hot spots don't move, and you get these incredible features. One feature in particular, let me rotate it around here a little bit. This sort of crack that you can see here, this right here is Valles Marineris. This is an enormous tectonic fissure. It's like a canyon, but not caused by erosion. It's caused by where the crust cracked open. It's like the Grand Canyon, but much bigger. In fact, this is about the width of the United States of America. So it just gives you an idea for how these features are on Mars. But for all its similarities to Earth, it has a lot of differences as well. The atmosphere of Mars is very thin, enough to burn up some meteors, but some impact, and they leave craters. So Mars has craters on its surface, some like the moon. And the atmosphere is carbon dioxide. You couldn't breathe on Mars, sorry to say. So if you were going to vacation there, that's also not a good place to go. But the temperature is a little more tolerable. It's not, you know, it's cold on Mars, but it's not intolerably cold. So if you wanted to crash land somewhere, Mars would be the choice because it would kill you the slowest. Let's put it that way. It has two moons, Phobos and Deimos. Their names mean fear and terror. There's nothing to be afraid of, though. See, Mars is named after the Roman god of war and what associated with war but fear and terror. There's Deimos. It's only a few miles across, and yes, it looks like a potato. Isn't that interesting? You see, small moons that are only a few miles across, Deimos is less than 10 miles across, they don't have enough gravity to pull them into a spherical shape, and so they tend to have kind of a random shape like a boulder. It's basically a large boulder orbiting around Mars. Again, only less than 10 miles across. So you could hike around that moon, and it would be a nice little hike for you. The inner of the two is Phobos, and it is possible to see these in a backyard telescope if you really know what you're doing. They're faint, but you can see them. So there's Phobos, and again, it's just a little bigger than Deimos. It's about 10 miles across, oddly shaped, and orbits very close to Mars. In fact, it orbits really close to Mars. It would be spectacular to stand on this little moon and look up in your sky and see Mars. Wouldn't that be amazing? And because it's so small, the gravity on this little world is very weak. In fact, you could pick up a rock and throw it into orbit. You could actually watch it go over the horizon, and you better duck because it's going to come up and hit you in the back of the head. It's interesting to see these situations that just wouldn't occur on the Earth. Mars itself, like the moon, has remnant magnetism. And remnant magnetism, again, is an indication that Mars once had a global polar magnetic field that's run down because it's smaller than the Earth is. And so even in 6,000 years, it's run down. But if it were billions of years old, the remnant magnetism shouldn't be there. It should have faded away because magnetic fields decay with time. They just naturally do. They get weaker and weaker year after year. So there's indications of the youth of Mars. A lot of talk about sending people to Mars, but that would be quite a challenge, really. The moon's one thing. The moon's close. The moon's 240,000 miles away. Some of you have cars with that many miles on them, if you've got a really good car. Mars is millions of miles away, and so it's a whole other ballgame there. Now, so far, all we've talked about are these inner planets. They're kind of like the Earth. They're terrestrial because you could land on them. You'd have to bring a spacesuit because you need something to breathe, but you could land on them, and there's a solid surface. The outer planets are different, and we'll go to Jupiter next. Jupiter is what we call a gas giant, a Jovian planet, a gas giant. And so there's no surface on Jupiter, at least no solid surface. It's a ball of gas held together by its own gravity. Yes, gas has gravity. If you have enough of it, it'll hold itself into a spherical shape that you see there. Jupiter's not exactly spherical, though, because it rotates quickly. It takes only 10 hours for this massive ball to turn. Jupiter's the largest planet in the solar system, 10 times the size of the Earth. So you could line up 10 Earths across the equator of Jupiter. And because it rotates in 10 hours, it actually has kind of a slightly non-spherical shape to it. It's a little bit of an elliptical. Because it's a ball of gas, you get wonderful cloud features on Jupiter, and that's what you're seeing. Those different colors are different layers of clouds. They're like jet streams on the Earth, but Earth only has 3 jet streams in a given hemisphere. Jupiter's bigger, so it has more of them. And so those are belts and zones. The dark areas are belts, like the two orange ones you see there near the equator, and the light ones are zones. And so there's different types of clouds. Clouds not just of water vapor like an Earth, but clouds of methane and ammonia, things of that nature. And of course, one of the things that people recognize on Jupiter is this great red spot, which astronomers call the Great Red Spot, yes. And that's basically an enormous hurricane. You could drop 2 Earths right in that thing. That's how massive it is. See, you know, when we consider the scale of these things, it gives us just a little window into the power of God who spoke all of this into existence. I mean, that's pretty awesome, really, if you think about it. God spoke, and this object, 10 times the size of the Earth, leapt into existence. Amazing. But that hurricane is also amazing, I think. It's been going on for at least 300 years since we've had telescopes powerful enough to see it. Now, hurricanes on Earth don't do that, right? Hurricanes on Earth, they're powered by the warmth of the ocean, and then when they run over land, they get cut off from their power source, and they decay away. But on Jupiter, there is no land. It's a ball of gas. Probably becomes liquid at some point, but there's no land on Jupiter. You can't land on Jupiter. There's nothing to land on. And so that hurricane just keeps going and going and going. And it might have been there since creation, for all we know. And in any case, it's very, very stable. Jupiter has a number of features that indicate that it can't be billions of years old. One of them is it has internal heat. Jupiter actually gives off twice as much energy as it takes in from the sun. So it takes in 1 unit of energy from sunlight and gives away 2 from that heat. And if it were billions of years old, it should have run out of heat by now because it's constantly giving away more energy than it's taking in. It should have run out by now, a long time ago. But in a few thousand years, it's not a problem. Jupiter also has a very strong magnetic field, very strong magnetic field, too strong for life. It would be a problem if you were to try to live close to Jupiter on one of its moons or something, one of the near moons, because that magnetic field induces radiation, induces currents, and so on. So that would be problematic. But magnetic fields decay with time. And so when you find a magnetic field, that's an indication that it's not billions of years old. It's consistent with the biblical time scale. Jupiter also has a number of moons that orbit it. Over 60 moons that orbit Jupiter. Most of them are very small. They're like those boulders that orbit Mars. But 4 of Jupiter's moons are quite large. And these were discovered in 1610 by Galileo, who was a Bible believer. A lot of people don't realize that. But in any case, when Galileo pointed his telescope at Jupiter, he saw these four little starlets next to Jupiter, and he realized that those had to be Jupiter's moons. And that was evidence that not everything, people at that time thought that everything orbited the Earth. A lot of people did. And Galileo realized, no, these moons orbit Jupiter, and that means that not everything orbits the Earth. So perhaps the Earth orbits the Sun. That led him to believe in the heliocentric model of the solar system, which is perhaps suggested in biblical passages like Isaiah 40:22. The innermost of Jupiter's four large moons is Io. Io is my very favorite moon because nothing looks like Io. It is so unique looking. Isn't that an interesting looking moon? Yeah, it just looks like an orange that you left in the refrigerator and forgot about it, doesn't it? Yeah. Really strange. Nothing looks like it. All those weird features there, that's surface composition. There's a lot of sulfur on its surface. If you've ever been to Yellowstone National Park, the area where the geysers are, and you get these weird yellow colors and oranges and so on because of the sulfur compounds, well, that's basically what Io is like. And so the smell would be terrible. It would smell like rotten eggs probably. But in any case, and it has volcanoes going off on the surface. Io is the most volcanically active world in our solar system. It's constantly popping off volcanoes. In fact, those little spots that you see there, those are not impact craters. Those are volcanoes. Each one of those is a volcano. When Voyager 2 flew past Io in the 80s, early 80s, it actually spotted 9 volcanoes going off at the same time. And we think that happens because Io is in between Jupiter and the next moon out, Europa, and so it gets squashed every time by the gravity of Jupiter and Europa, and that heats up the interior. But it might just be an indication that it's young, because worlds that are not billions of years old can still have internal heat. Wonderful moon. And you could imagine the view from this moon, too, as you looked in your night sky. If you're on the correct side of Io, you could see Jupiter in your night sky, and that would be quite spectacular, wouldn't it? So that's Io, the innermost of Jupiter's four moons. The next one out is Europa. Io and Europa are both about the same size as Earth's moon, just to give you a comparison. And Europa is known because it has these strange streaks across its surface, like scratch marks, like a big cosmic cat came and just swiped the surface like that, especially on this side. Isn't that fascinating? And we're not exactly sure what causes those, but one theory is that they're caused by ice geysers. So warmth from the interior of Europa causes material to stream out into space. And if that's the case, then it would be good evidence that this moon is not anywhere near billions of years old. It's consistent with the biblical timescale of thousands of years. So it's quite interesting, the variety that God has created in our solar system. These moons all look so unique and different. The third moon out from Jupiter, of the large four moons, is Ganymede. Ganymede is the largest moon in the solar system. It's actually bigger than the planet Mercury. But because Ganymede orbits another planet rather than the sun directly, it's classified as a moon. If it orbited the sun directly, it would be a planet for sure. And I just love the color of Ganymede because it's got this sort of tricolor. You get the white spots, and then you got a medium brown, and then a dark brown. And you realize that when you see all these colors on all these moons, you realize we kind of got ripped off on our moon because our moon's very gray. But some of these moons are just stunningly beautiful. And so that's Ganymede. And then the outermost is Callisto. And Callisto is just a little bit smaller than Ganymede. And again, this is all real. This is not Star Wars special effects. This is data we have because we've sent spacecraft past these little moons. This is what you would see if you were there. And truth is stranger than fiction. God has designed some lovely artwork out in space. So those are the four inner moons, the four big moons, I should say, of Jupiter. And it has other moons that are even closer and a lot that are farther away. The interesting thing about Jupiter's moons, the inner moons all orbit in the same direction as Jupiter, that's prograde, and they all orbit in the same plane. And that is a design feature, because there's not a lot of space available there. And so if they were orbiting in different directions, there would be a chance of collision, or there'd be a chance that two would come close to each other and their gravity would kick them out, because these moons are, at least the four big ones, they're big, they've got gravity. And so they have to be organized that way. The outer moons of Jupiter, however, don't have to be organized that way. There's a lot more space available, and so the outer moons kind of do what they want. Look at that. And if we speed up time, you can see the inner moons all go the same way. The outer moons, some of them go backwards. A lot of them go backwards, actually, relative to Jupiter, as you can see there. And it looks very chaotic, but in fact, each of those outer moons has its own stable orbit, elliptical orbit. It's just they're all in different orientations, and they're not even in the plane of Jupiter's equator, as we can see if we rotate the system around. The inner moons are all in the same plane. The outer moons kind of do what they want, and they can. And that's a design feature, because there's a lot of space available out, you know, in these outer regions of Jupiter. It looks crowded, but it's not. It's actually, there's a lot of space between these moons, and so for that reason, the chances of collision are remote. So that's the Jupiter system, visited by a number of spacecraft, Pioneer 10 and 11, Voyager 1 and 2, and then the Galileo spacecraft. And I think Cassini flew by it as well. So Saturn, then, is the next planet out. Everybody's favorite, right, besides Earth, because Saturn has that beautiful ring system. And it's a lot of fun to look at in a small telescope. You can see those rings. In fact, you can even see the rings in really good binoculars. You just got to know which one's Saturn. And I've got some books, by the way, out there that will tell you how to find that if you're interested in doing something like that. So there's the Saturn system. The planet itself is a lot like Jupiter, just a little smaller. Saturn's about 9 Earths across, but it has that amazing ring system, which are basically trillions of tiny little moons that orbit around Saturn's equator, and so many that you can't pick out any one. They kind of blend together, and so it's really a very beautiful planet. And fortunately, the Lord tilted this planet. By the way, that's surprising from a secular perspective, because if our solar system formed from an accidental collapsing nebula, everything ought to be spinning in the same direction and upright. But Saturn is tilted substantially. And that's good, because if it weren't, you would never know that it had rings. Because when Saturn is edge on, you cannot see the rings, interestingly. And so fortunately, the Lord tilted that planet. There's a famous image of Saturn that shows it in a crescent phase, kind of like that. And that's a neat image. A lot of people don't realize the significance of that. You can't see a crescent Saturn from Earth, because in order to see something in a crescent phase, you have to be farther away from the sun than the object. And so this is a proof that we really have sent spacecraft past Saturn. And it's just quite lovely to look at. Saturn sometimes will develop storms on its surface, and you can see these in a backyard telescope. They're just fun to watch. Like Jupiter, Saturn has a strong magnetic field, and that is an indication that it cannot be anywhere near billions of years old, because magnetic fields decay with time. We know that happens. We've been able to measure the decay of Earth's magnetic field. There's no way it's billions of years old. The magnetic field decay would limit Earth's age to 60,000 years maximum, and even that's an extreme upper limit. And Saturn, likewise, has that strong magnetic field. Has a number of interesting moons that orbit around Saturn. One of the most famous is Titan. And Titan looks really odd, because it's bright orange. And there's just nothing that looks like that. And you can even see Titan in binoculars. When you look at Saturn, you'll always see this little orange star next to it, and that is Titan. It's, I think, the second largest moon in the solar system. For a while, they thought it was the largest. But it actually looks a little bigger than it is, because it's got a thick atmosphere of hydrocarbons. Like, gasoline is a hydrocarbon, so gasoline would be really cheap on Titan, because that's what it's made of, basically. But on the other hand, oxygen would be expensive, so count your blessings. There's no oxygen on Titan, so that'd be a problem. But we've sent spacecraft past Titan. We've actually landed a probe on the surface, interestingly. And some of the spacecraft have mapped the surface using radar. And so we know what the surface looks like. It looks kind of like that. Now, we have one side in lower resolution, the other side in higher resolution. And we think those are methane lakes, interestingly. A lot of methane on Titan. And that is a problem for billions of years, because methane is destroyed by ultraviolet light from the sun. And so if Titan really were billions of years old, the methane should be gone. But in fact, it's abundant. And so that's an indication that it's thousands of years old, but nowhere near billions of years old. Lots of stuff like that in the solar system. So that's the moon Titan. Go back to Saturn here. All kinds of moons around Saturn that are interesting, but Titan is just unique, because it's the only moon that has that thick atmosphere. There's another moon around Saturn that's very interesting. It's called Iapetus. And the interesting thing about Iapetus is, when astronomers first discovered it, they found they could only see it when it was on the right side of Saturn, but not when it was on the left side of Saturn. How does that work? It seemed to disappear at half of every orbit. Well, like all large moons, Iapetus keeps its same face pointed towards Saturn, which means when it's on the right side of Saturn, you see one side. When it's on the other side of Saturn, you see the other side. What if one side is very bright and the other side very dark? That would account for that, wouldn't it? And so when the spacecraft flew past Iapetus, they confirmed that indeed one side is very dark. And as we spin it around, the other side is white as snow. Isn't that interesting? And so again, the Lord is very creative in some of the things that he has made. Beautiful little moon. And unlike the near moons, Iapetus orbits out of the plane of the rings. So that'd be a fun moon to have a base on, because then you could see Saturn and its rings in all their glory. And that would be quite lovely. So isn't it interesting how each of these worlds just displays God's creativity, especially that ring system? That is just ingenious and very beautiful. God has an artistic sense. In fact, we derive our artistic sense from God anyway, so he's the ultimate artist. In the 1980s, 1986, Voyager 2 flew past the planet Uranus and found, well, we already knew this, that Uranus is tilted on its side. And that is very perplexing to the secularists, because again, if the solar system formed from a collapsing cloud, everything ought to be spinning the same way and upright. And Uranus is tilted like 96 degrees relative to its orbit around the sun. What that means is sometimes the North Pole is pointed right at the sun, and that was the configuration when Voyager 2 flew past this world, and it measured a very strong magnetic field. By the way, Russ Humphreys in 1984, he's the physicist who's a creationist, a friend of mine, he predicted that the magnetic field of this planet Uranus would be detectable, and he predicted what it would be based on its age of 6,000 years. The secularists had their prediction too. They predicted the magnetic field should be basically dead, because they think this planet's 4.5 billion years old, and therefore the magnetic field should have decayed away millions of years ago. And when Voyager 2 flew past, it detected a magnetic field that was right spot on what Dr. Humphreys had predicted. So you see how creationists, if you start with the Bible, you're going to tend to make correct predictions. If you ignore the Bible and rely on guesswork, you're going to tend to make wrong predictions. That's just the way it works. You want to know the truth about the universe, you better start with what the creator of the universe has said about the universe. That's what it comes down to. Uranus sometimes develops clouds on it, but in that particular year, and that particular date when Voyager 2 flew past, it was a sunny day on Uranus. There's not a single cloud in the sky. Just recently, they took some Hubble images of the planet Uranus, and now it's, of course, the seasons are different now. It's in a different season, and one hemisphere is almost completely covered in white clouds. It's beautiful. It's just really that sky blue with the clouds on top of it is very lovely. Uranus has a number of moons. It has five that are relatively large: Miranda, Ariel, Umbriel, Titania, and Oberon. Here's Miranda, and it looks like some kind of catastrophe happened on Miranda, because there's that big check mark, kind of an inverted check mark on the side, which is quite lovely. Now, we only know what the northern hemisphere of these moons look like because they also are tilted as they orbit around the equator of the planet Uranus. So that strong magnetic field, again, is an indication of the youth of this planet. So that was 86 when Voyager flew past that. And then in 89, Voyager flew past Neptune. And that was possible really by divine providence. It was only in the 1980s where all the planets lined up, the outer planets lined up into this perfect arc where we could use the gravity of one planet to slingshot Voyager 2 to the next planet, to the next planet, to the next planet. So one spacecraft was able to visit four planets in a row because God had lined them up in just the right way such that when technology developed to the point we could send spacecraft into space, we could do all four. Very neat. And that doesn't happen very often where they line up that way. So there's the planet Neptune, and it's similar to Uranus. It's about four times the size of the Earth, has a strong magnetic field, which indicates that it's not billions of years old. It has internal heat like Jupiter. In fact, it gives off 2.6 times as much energy as it receives from the sun. So it would be a problem if it were billions of years old, because why hasn't it cooled off by now? It's kind of like if you came across a piece of charcoal and it's hot, it's glowing. Would you say, well, yeah, that's probably been like that for millions of years? No, you'd say, obviously, very recently it was in a fireplace or something. You know, it's obviously been cooling off since then. So Neptune's like that. Not that it's warm, it's just warmer than it should be if it were billions of years old. A stunning blue color caused probably by Rayleigh scattering of the methane molecules. And then, of course, it has a large storm, much like Jupiter's red spot. It also has a great dark spot on its surface. But unlike Jupiter's red spot, this one is unstable. It comes and goes. Sometimes it's not there. And sometimes there's another one that forms in the northern hemisphere. So the weather patterns are a little different on Neptune for reasons that are not completely understood. There's a lot of mysteries that the Lord still has in place for us in the solar system there. Regarding the moons, it has a number of moons. Some of them were discovered fairly recently. But one of the most interesting ones is Triton, because Triton is the only large moon that orbits backwards. And you can see it out there orbiting the opposite way as the other ones. And it's not in the plane of the equator of the planet either. So there's little Triton. And Voyager 2 flew past it as well. And if you're wondering why some of that's low resolution, well, Voyager was far away when it got the pictures of that side. And then as it got closer, this thing's rotating. And so fortunately, we got some really good resolution images of this side. And we discovered something really fantastic here. If we zoom in a bit, you can see these dark streaks. You see those? Those are nitrogen geysers. And so they carry soot up with them into a very thin atmosphere. And then the atmosphere blows kind of east to west. And so as the soot falls out of suspension, it causes these dark streaks. So every one of those is a geyser. And that tells us that Triton has internal energy, which can't be if it were billions of years old. It should have run out of that energy a long time ago. So again, it's an indication of the youth of the solar system. Lots of stuff like that. This really had the secularists scratching their heads, because how could it possibly have any internal heat after billions of years? But it does. And we see evidence of that with those nitrogen geysers there. So Neptune is a really neat planet. It was discovered by its perturbation on the orbit of Uranus. The planet Uranus, when it was discovered, was off from where it was predicted to be. And two mathematicians independently said, well, there must be another planet out there pulling on it. And they calculated the location of Neptune. And one of them sent his prediction into an observatory and said, if you point your telescope here, I'm pretty confident you'll find a new planet. And sure enough, there it was. Just amazing. Leverrier is credited with the discovery of Neptune, and he's said to have been the man who discovered a planet with the point of his pen, because he did it from math. And it really shows you the power of mathematics as a gift of God to us, that we can actually discover things before we see them. It's pretty amazing. So the Neptune system, and I think we're pretty much out of time. So I'm going to go ahead and we wanted to do Pluto, but that's okay. It's cool too. You'll take my word for it. So thank you very much for having me out to speak. I really appreciate it. There are some resources over there on your way out, and I want to thank you very much.